Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Many people will celebrate Friday as Cesar Chavez Day, which marks what would have been the iconic leader's 96th birthday. 30 years after his death, Chavez has cemented his legacy to the farm workers movement with strikes and a nonviolent approach in creating change for farm workers' rights. Yet, the deeper story of Cesar Chavez is much more complex and at times controversial. Some of his actions and his comments in the past would even be considered hardline conservative in today's politics. It's undeniable that his work helped advance the rights for so many people and gave Mexican Americans a symbol to look up to. Helping us unpack the legacy and the controversies behind the icon that is Cesar Chavez is Miriam Powell, who has written a biography on Cesar Chavez and reported extensively on the farm workers movement. Good morning, Miriam.
Hi, Vicky.
When did you first begin reporting and learning about the farm workers movement, in which culminated into multiple published books?
So I started reporting on the farm workers movement when I was a reporter at the Los Angeles Times in 2005. And I was specializing in reporting on agriculture in the state, which, of course, is a huge industry, and began to look at conditions for farm workers, which were still in many ways, as we're seeing today with some of the tragedies that have been unfolding with in climate change, that farm workers still lived in very difficult conditions, and was spending some time in camps in San Diego and began to look at what the UFW was doing. I was a baby boomer who grew up with the idea of boycotting grapes and had a you know, as most people do, a very nebulous view of Cesar Chavez. I really didn't know much, and so started to look into what the union was doing and not doing and what it had become. And that kind of led me back in time to a look at both the remarkable movement that he created and all of the changes and things that happened in the 60s and 70s, and then sort of what happened to make that union not be a lasting force. And how do we get to the point today where studies say that, you know, statistically 0% of the farm workers in California are actually under union contracts.
Yeah, and we'll get into that in just a moment. When it comes to Cesar Chavez, I mean, in many ways, he's this iconic labor leader. What was most interesting and even challenging in learning more about the human, the person, Cesar Chavez?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think for me, doing the biography and learning about his childhood, his early years working in the fields, what that was like, what conditions were like that he grew up in, was really helpful in understanding what motivated him. And then also learning about sort of the 10 years that he spent learning to be a community organizer with a group called the Community Service Organization before he founded the UFW, was really instrumental to me in understanding sort of both his tactics, his strategies, sort of seeing how he developed. I mean, he didn't just spring full-born onto the cover of Time magazine in 1969. So all of that was fascinating. And then trying to unravel some of the things that went wrong in the end with the union and why, and understanding from his point of view why he made some of the decisions that he did. Mm-hmm.
Given that he was born in Yuma, Arizona in 1927 and had parents that were already with established roots in the region, how did that impact Cesar Chavez's view of undocumented migrants coming to the United States?
Well, I think it's important to put things in context of the time. And at that time, the difference between Mexicans and Mexican Americans was really significant in terms of how people viewed each other, viewed themselves, and in terms of identity. And also there's, you know, always an issue with strikes of being concerned about migrant, about scab labor. And the openness of the border at that point in time meant that growers could easily get workers to come across and break strikes. And that changed his, you know, as you said, he came from an established family. He was a Mexican American, and migrants who came from Mexico and went back and forth, which was relatively easy to do, you know, came to make money. And that becomes an issue for him because He's this very interesting and atypical labor leader who really didn't believe that workers should want to make too much money. They should want to sacrifice. They should have, you know, decent working conditions and be respected, but also sacrifice for the common good. So his feelings about migrants were very complicated.
Yeah, and the issues that he had with undocumented immigrants and migrants was also folded into the UFW movement. I think a lot of people would be surprised that, you know, he reported over 2,000 undocumented immigrants in Fresno to government officials, and that there was even a UFW, United Farm Workers Border Patrol group, right, that was placed along the Arizona border to prevent potential, as you say, scabbers from coming to America.
That's right. And there was violence, and there were things that really upset people at the time. There was something called the, quote, illegals campaign, in which everyone in the UFW who worked for the union, who were all volunteers, were basically directed to report undocumented immigrants to the INS because they were interfering with the allegation was that they were strike breakers. The truth is, it was, you know, it was much more complicated. There were a lot of undocumented workers then who were very loyal supporters of the UFW also. So the controversy over the illegals campaign was in sort of an early rupture in the union.
How should we view these actions that happened decades ago in today's time?
I think one has to sort of look at the context, the use of language, for example. I mean, there are people who have been very critical of him for using the word wetback. There were people at the time who objected to that, but on the whole, it was a much more commonly used word. So I do think that we have to look in context at we can't judge people solely by what they did by our standards, and yet we obviously also have to make those judgments in some ways.
Yeah, one of our producers actually found an interview with KQED in the 70s where Cesar Chavez refers to undocumented workers as illegals, or a term that you just said that can carry heavy pain for the Mexican-American community. You know, last year we spoke with Cesar Chavez's son, and we also interviewed Dolores Huerta in April, you know, ahead of her birthday. There mm-hmm. are other contributions of other farm worker leaders like Dolores Huerta, who has increasingly gained more attention and awareness. But decades after this movement and the attention that Cesar Chavez received, as well as Larry Itliong, and we also touched upon Philip Veracruz, the conversations about the farm workers movement often left out these critical leaders, at least decades ago. Why was it that Chavez was able to become this figure and this icon of a movement when there were other people who were critical to it?
I think that in some ways he deserves the reputation as the founder. I think that without him, this movement would not have happened. He was a very charismatic leader in his own way, in a very atypical way, because he was not a Kennedy-esque great speaker and visibly charismatic leader. But because of his brilliant strategy, and because of the fact that he walked the walk, he went to jail, he fasted, he was able to deliver and to show poor people that the poorest people in the state, you know, could, by banding together, take on the most powerful industry. And that got him the attention and deservedly so. On the other hand, you are absolutely right. I mean, there are, of course, a core of people, including Gilbert Padilla and others, who were there at the early at the earliest time, and his wife Helen Chavez as well, who were indispensable. And there are outside organizations who were indispensable, like the greater labor community, and in many ways the religious community also, who were able to provide that external support for things like the Great Boycott that enabled him to exert the kind of pressure that was needed in order to get reforms within the fields.
Why was there fallout between Chavez and some of the other founders like Larry Itliong or Philip Veracruz?
I think some of it had to do with differences in direction, and some of it had to do with Chavez's sort of increasingly, well, I would say from the beginning, need demand to be in control and to make decisions. And so as the organization got larger and larger and achieved these victories and won a law that allowed them to have elections and to win contracts for workers, the nature of the organization changed. And there are these agonizing discussions that I've listened to on tapes that he made of the internal meetings of the union, where they begin to have this deliberation of, are we a movement or are we a union? And we can't be both because we don't have the resources, we don't have the strength, we're not able to pull it together to both be a functional labor union in a more traditional sense, and then also be the movement. And for Chavez, the movement came first, and he makes that very, very clear. And that becomes something that comes at the cost of really being an effective union. And he begins to also then see people as being disloyal if they disagree with him or are trying to move the organization in a different direction. And there are a series of purges, and things begin to sort of fall apart as he loses control and is kind of unable to make that transition from being a movement to being a labor union.
What lasting legacy do you think that is left on the United Farm Workers and overall the movement?
I think he had this enormous impact on the Chicano movement at the time. That this idea that he showed what could be done by people who really had the least possible resources, that strategic brilliance and that example and those ways of community organizing became a lasting legacy that was carried on by a generation of people who came through the UFW, who were trained by him, who looked up to him as an inspiration. And in many ways, his legacy, you know, is not in the fields, it's in the cities and in places where this generation of leadership who were trained under him went on to work in other labor unions, in the environmental movement, and all sorts of social justice causes. So I think that's the most important legacy in many ways. And then again, and why I wrote the book, is that studying how he did this and both what went right and what went wrong, you know, is enormously inspirational and also I think useful for people who are interested in social justice and in figuring out, you know, how to change the world.
The United Farm Workers, UFW, I mean, they are still relevant today, especially when talking about the challenges that currently exist. They have a small membership. There were also significant victories that took place last year with Governor Newsom signing Assembly Bill 2183. We even had the UFW president, Teresa Romero, on Insight, who walked along the same path as Cesar Chavez during this more than like 300-mile pilgrimage to get that bill passed. If Cesar Chavez was alive today, what do you think he would do? And how do you think he would view the current struggles and also the progress that took place in the last year?
So I think it depends on which Cesar Chavez you're looking at in terms of whether you're looking at the younger Cesar Chavez or the older Cesar Chavez in some sense. And I would say that the Cesar Chavez, who I think is worth studying and important and heroic in his accomplishments, would want to go out and actually organize again, which is not something that's been happening in the fields, even though you're right, of course, that the law is now stronger and it makes it easier for the union to get elections, but they haven't been using the law that they had. So I think the question is sort of, you know, will the UFW return to its roots, which were really organizing in a very basic one-on-one way and showing workers what kind of strength they had by banding together? I think there's an open question as to whether they will do that in the way that he did in, you know, in his early years, or whether they will continue to be largely a political lobbying group, which may get some victories in the sort of the legislative arena. But, you know, Cesar Chavez often said that he did not want to depend on the state or on politicians or elected officials to do things, that the strongest way to make change was to have the people who were really affected by it organize themselves and force that change. So it has to come from the ground up. And that's something that, you know, that we have not been seeing happen. So the question is sort of, will there be more top-down change or will there be a return to that sort of grassroots organizing?
Mm. Finally, Miriam, I mean, you have this unparalleled view of Cesar Chavez, given the years of research that you have done. What was the most surprising thing you learned about Cesar Chavez that doesn't come to the front of our collective minds?
I think that's a hard question for me. I think that just his complexity, I don't think that I would say it was surprising, but I think that the more that I learned about him and studied him and researched and talked to people, you know, I got into this because the movement that he led was such a profoundly transformational experience for everyone I met who had been involved in it. And I wanted to understand what that was about. You know, I don't think we've seen a movement of that power in a long time. So I wanted to understand that. And then I think I ultimately came to understand why it was that he, in essence, abandoned the union in some ways in order to try to preserve that. And I always sort of talk about him as a heroic figure in the Greek definition of the word hero. Our word hero comes from the Greek definition, which is the marriage of a mortal and a god. And from the godlike parent, they derive that superhuman strength that they have. And that was really interesting to me to understand what his superhuman strength was. What was his superpower? And then from their mortal parent, they inherit their tragic flaws. And understanding how those two come together in one person, I think, you know, it should increase our appreciation of their heroism and their humanity.
Miriam, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Happy Cesar Chavez Day.
Yes, and so interesting. An interesting way to start ahead of the holiday. Miriam Powell is a biographer of Cesar Chavez and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.